Wow, full room and standing room. Great. I'm very flattered. This story of mine on cryptography really kind of started here at DragonCon, so there's a full circle sense for me of giving this talk here. For those who may be listening to this on the web, I'm going to be going through a lot of visuals, a lot of PowerPoint slides, some of them with very, very cool visuals like overhead views of CIA headquarters and whatnot. So I will have a link on the web where you can access the slides, and you might want to go ahead and do that. Hi, my name is Ilanka, and I will be speaking today on a sculpture that is at the center of CIA headquarters called Kryptos. And this sculpture has some codes on it, some of which have been solved, one of which has not, and the one that has not been solved is one of the most famous unsolved codes in the world. I will also be talking about another sculpture made by the same artist called the Cyrillic Projector, which has a code that is related to the CIA one. That one had been unsolved for several years, but I led a team that did crack that one last year, and I'm going to be talking about how we did that and what clues it might have given us for the CIA version of the sculpture. So I'll be going over the DragonCon story. The Freaknik code ties into DragonCon. How many people here have attended the EFF track sessions in previous years? That's about half the room. And how many have ever heard of the Freaknik code? Okay, several people here. I'll be talking a little bit more about what that is. So how this ties into DragonCon is that my day job is that I am a game developer. I make games for the internet at a website called play.net. And I was invited here to DragonCon several years ago because of that, because of the game development part. And so I'd come to the game design panels, and those panels would be given here in the EFF track. And after the game development panels, other people would be coming in and talking on different subjects. And a big part of the EFF track is that the hackers come in, the 2600 group, and they talk about computer security and how to keep your computer safe from them and people like them. And so I would kind of meet them before and after the sessions. We'd kind of wave in the halls and have a beer at the end of the day. And through them, I heard about this code called the Freaknik code, which was a code that had been released as a challenge at a hacker convention called Freaknik, with a prize offered to the first person to crack the code. And it had been a year, and no one had cracked the code yet, so I decided, after the convention, I was really bored one weekend, and I decided to take a look at it. And I cracked it. It took me 10 days, but I cracked the code and I won the prize, which was a free trip to a hacker convention and free hotel and free drinks and T-shirts and all that good stuff. And then I started looking for other hacker code challenges, and I started cracking those too, and cracking more and cracking more. And it got to the point where there was one of the hacker conventions was called AtlantiCon, and this is the AtlantiCon code challenge. They released this on a sheet of paper. And at the bottom of the paper it says, note, past puzzle crackers are ineligible for prizes associated with solving the AtlantiCon 2 puzzle. Give someone else a chance, Ilanka. So I sort of got this rep for cracking these codes. Getting back to what I'm going to be going over in the talk, I'm going to be going over various codes and Jim Sanborn's sculptures and a little bit of the nitty-gritty on codes, but not a lot. This kind of a beginning audience will have no trouble understanding what I cover. A little bit more about me. I've been involved in computers since a very young age. My father was involved with computers back when they used to fill an entire room, and when the computer crashed, they would need to re-enter the operating system by hand in binary by punching in little numbers. So I've been involved around those computers for a long time, and I've been a cryptography speaker at several different conventions around the country. I cracked a whole bunch of codes, and also after September 11th, I organized a crisis center for my company. Many of my customers were affected since they log on from all over the world, and many of them wanted to know who was in New York, are they okay, and so I made a large database, and everyone was sending in just hundreds of reports on who they'd heard from and who was a firefighter, who was involved with the rescue effort. And one of my customers perpetrated a hoax. He decided to use September 11th as an opportunity to declare himself dead, and then was going around online pretending to be his own widow and was really traumatizing a lot of people. And I was the person that figured that out and tracked him down and confronted him and got him to eventually post a public confession about what he'd done and a public apology to the community. And let's see, also the Cyrillic Projector will go into that. And one of the questions people were asking me about Kryptos is how famous is Kryptos? And so I kept looking around on the web for a list of famous unsolved codes. And there wasn't really a list that I was happy with, so I decided to make my own list of what are the most famous unsolved codes in the world. And I worked with several major cryptographers to compile this list. And so now that's another hobby of mine, is maintaining that list. This is a picture of the Freaknik 3 code. It had been uncracked in about a year. And then I cracked it in 10 days. And then I wrote a tutorial on how I did it. And it's written in a very fun, cyberpunk, tongue-in-cheek kind of style. So if you have a chance on the web later and you enjoy reading that kind of stuff, I think you'll find it a fun read. So through the Freaknik 3 code, there were things in there that could be solved, and then there were also some dead ends, some red herrings, some things that couldn't be solved. Like they'd say, okay, you finished the previous section of the puzzle, now go solve this. And there was a link to the CIA's crypto sculpture saying, solve this next as part of the Freaknik code. And of course, no one had solved it then or since, but it was through that Freaknik code that I heard about, through DragonCon, that I heard about Kryptos. And so I started to research it a little more and got very intrigued by it. And then September 11th happened, and I went out to D.C. to visit a cousin of mine after September 11th. And we were driving around, and we went to see the Pentagon. My cousin works in the Pentagon occasionally, and he actually had a close call on September 11th. He was on his way to give a talk, and he was delayed because he was having printer problems. And then he fixed the printer problems, and then he was on his way, and he checked his cell phone messages, and his cell phone actually crashed because there were so many messages from people saying, a plane just hit, don't go. And the plane actually hit right where he was going to be, and some of the people he was supposed to brief were killed. So I went out after September 11th to spend time with my cousin, be very thankful that he was all right. We went to the memorial. And then we were driving around Washington, D.C., and he said, okay, well, you're here. Do you want to do any sightseeing? And I said, sure. And he said, well, what do you want to see? And I thought about it, and I said, hey, you know, I want to see the crypto sculpture. And he said, okay, I'll take you there. Where is it? And I said, well, I know the CIA is in Langley, Virginia. And he said, okay, Langley's not that far away. Let's find it. And then we ran into a problem, that there's no street address for CIA headquarters. It's not an easy, you can't just go to MapQuest and type in, you know, give me directions to the headquarters. So, I looked. There's no street address. There's like a post office box if you want to send them a resume or something. So I wasn't going to really let that slow me down too much, so I kept digging and kept digging. And I sort of knew what the building looked like because I'd seen, like, overhead views in Tom Clancy movies. You know, here's CIA headquarters, Langley. And Langley isn't that big. So I went and I downloaded a bunch of satellite reconnaissance pictures of the entire Langley, Virginia area, and then I went looking through all those pictures until I found the outline of the building. And then I said, okay, there's CIA headquarters. And so we went and we drove to CIA headquarters. And I had someone in the front row here said, that's so scary. So I figured that my cousin and I, we kind of figured that we'd take the highway there and like take the exit and kind of like just drive down the service road and kind of scope things out. And but the thing is, when you take the exit, there's no service road. You take the exit and you're right there at this huge gate with barbed wire and a bunch of big guys with guns that are coming pouring out of these guard shacks asking very reasonable questions. Who are you and why are you here? And I said, I really want to just see the crypto sculpture. And they said, oh, crypto, sorry, you can't get in. And I'm like, well, I really want to see cryptos. And they said, sorry, it's for official business only. And I said, well, I mean, and I tried every trick I could think of to talk my way in. I'm like, well, you know, can I get an invitation from my congressman? Is there a public tour day? And they were very polite but very firm, and they said, sorry, it's for official business only. And again, they had guns, and they're big guys. And so I wasn't going to get in. I drove away, and I kept thinking about official business. Well, as a sidetrack to this, I'd also, after September 11th, and I've been working on my crisis center, I was wondering if all my crypto skills from cracking all these hacker code challenges, I was wondering if any of these could be of use to the government in the war on terrorism. So I had called up my local FBI office in St. Louis, and I said, hey, can I help? And they said no. So I kept calling back. I am very persistent. And about once a week, I would call them back, and I'd say, can I help, can I help, can I help? And they kept saying no. And finally, I got an agent who said, well, what kind of codes is it that you know about? And I said, well, I listed off various types of systems that I'd become familiar with. And one of them I listed was something called steganography. And there had been rumors at the time that the agent said, you know, we've been hearing rumors that Al-Qaeda might be using steganography as a way of sending hidden messages. Steganography, in a nutshell, is a way of hiding a message inside of a picture that's on a web page. And so the agent asked me if I could put together a little talk about what steganography was. He says, I'm sure that there's big brains in Washington, D.C. that know all about this, but here we're at St. Louis field office, and we're doing different things here, and we don't have a bunch of big crypto experts. So I put together a talk, and the talk was really well received, and I ended up giving it to FBI agents and Secret Service and Assistant U.S. Attorney and Postal Inspectors and Customs Agents and all sorts of different agencies. And then I had this talk, and while I was putting together the talk, I was thinking, this is sort of like official business, isn't it? And so I decided that I was going to try and use this talk as a way of getting into CIA headquarters. So every time I'd give the talk, because I didn't know anyone at CIA, every time I gave the talk, I was like, maybe someone will know someone that will know someone at CIA. Well, one of the places I gave the talk was at DEF CON. How many people here know what DEF CON is? Well, a lot of people. Okay, DEF CON, for everyone, is it's a major hacker convention in Las Vegas. Brings in thousands of people from around the world, and it's probably the biggest underground tech culture convention in the world. And I gave my talk about steganography and Al-Qaeda codes in Vegas, and I put this slide in my presentation, and I actually hid something inside the slide. That was my example, that I was using this picture to show how steganography worked. And every time I would give the talk, I would say, I would really love to give this talk at CIA. And at the end of my talk, this big hacker convention, 1,000 people in the room, and at the end of the talk, people are coming up and giving me business cards and stuff. And one person comes up to the front of the room, and they lean over the podium, and they look at me, and they say, I work at Langley. I think I can get you in. I'm like, cool. I don't want to be paid. I'll pay my own way. I just want, I want time. I want 2 hours to sit on that rock and have some time to observe the crypto sculpture. And they gave me a first name. They gave me a phone number. They wouldn't give me any other information. And after the convention, I called up the phone number and got in contact. And I wanted to make sure that they were really CIA. It wasn't just somebody at a HackerCon who'd come to me and said that they were CIA. So I made sure that they wrote to me from an official address, and I wrote back to them at that address. So we had two-way communication established. And they said, okay, we do want you to come out and give this talk. I'm like, great. I don't want to be paid. I just want my time to look at crypto. So I was really worried that they'd invite me in there and that I would speak, and then they'd like hustle me out the front door, and I'd never get a chance to look at the sculpture. So we go back and forth, and they say, okay, how much do you want to be paid? I'm like, I don't want to be paid. I just want my 2 hours to look at the crypto sculpture. And they kept saying, no, we have to pay you. I'm like, I don't want to be paid. I just want my time looking at the crypto sculpture. And so we go back and forth, and they said, well, how much do you want? I'm like, I reimburse my travel expenses, make an offer. I'm not going to say no. Anything you offer me, I'm going to say yes. And $500, fine, airfare, whatever. But whatever you say, I'm going to say yes. So we go back and forth like this for a while. And finally, they contact me, and they say, okay, we want you to speak. You'll get your time to look at the crypto sculpture, and we're going to pay you $2,500. I'm like, yes, okay. So I did finally get into CIA headquarters, and I was able to observe this sculpture. And I got some rubbings of the sculpture. And after my visit, I went back home and I set up a website and I put my rubbings of the sculpture up on the web. And then I started getting this correspondence from all over the world, because all of a sudden I had like the premier cryptos website out there. And people were sending me their theories and saying, I've solved cryptos. And I'm like, cool, tell me what the answer is. And they would say, it's proof that space aliens control the government. I'm like, okay, can you show me how to duplicate to get that message? And they'd send me, I got a lot of really weird stuff in email. But I also had some really legitimate researchers that were writing to me and sharing their information. And one of them, named Gary Warzen, said, we really need to set up some sort of a discussion group about this. And I said, sure, sounds like a great idea. So Gary and I formed a discussion group. And then dozens of people are coming in from around the world. And this thing's just growing and growing and growing. And people are asking questions. And I'm writing and trying to get information. And like one of the questions is, who made cryptos? I can answer that one. It's a man named James Sanborn. And then and they say, okay, what other sculptures has James Sanborn done? And I'm like, oh, I don't know. And so I contacted his gallery, his agent, and I said, can you send me a list of everything that Sanborn's done? And they said, there is no such list. I'm like, well, he must have done some other pieces. And they say, there's no master list of everything he's done. It's much too complicated. Nobody could ever possibly compile a list of everything that Sanborn has done. So I said, okay, I'll make a list of everything that Sanborn has ever done. So I started writing to art galleries all over the country, all over the world, and they started sending me their catalogs, and newspapers were helping me. And then I started getting involved with, like, the government agencies that set up the budget of requesting public art, and they were sending me information, and they were letting me come into their rooms and go through the belly of the beast, the files of the United States government, researching everything that Sanborn had ever done. So at my apartment, I call it, it was turning into Smithsonian West. I was just getting stacks and stacks of art and things, and I was finding these things that were really obscure, like internal CIA correspondence and classified KGB documents, and I'm scanning it all, and I'm putting it on the web. And yeah, and I mean, if I saw something that was classified, I'd call up, you know, I have a contact at the FBI, and I'd say, I got this classified document, and he would, like, check it out, and he says, okay, well, that got smuggled out of Russia in 1990, and it's in the Library of Congress now, so it's public records. You're okay. I'm like, okay. The last thing I want is, you know, that knock on the door, why do you have classified documents? So let me go into more of the details now about crypto. So it was commissioned in 1988. The CIA, their headquarters building, they'd outgrown it, and so they had what's now known as the old headquarters building, and they wanted to put up the new headquarters building. And they did, and as part of the new headquarters building, they put out a call for art, saying, we want more sculpture to put around the building. And Sanborn was one of the people that responded, and it was this long, involved bid process. And I've seen, like, all the correspondence about the selection committee and correspondence to the committee and the committee reviewing each artist, and then correspondence to each member of the committee saying that, yes, that they've seen the reviews of each artist. It was just huge amounts of government paperwork. But Sanborn was the one that was chosen. And he worked with a man who was about to retire from the CIA named Ed Scheidt, who is allegedly the chairman of the, or was the chairman of the CIA Cryptographic Center. I say allegedly because all the articles say Ed Scheidt, chairman of the CIA Cryptographic Center. But I've never found any record before or since of any CIA Cryptographic Center or anyone who was a chairman of any CIA Cryptographic Center. So my belief is that it's just a made-up title. But he definitely knew codes. And I've met Ed since then, I had dinner with Ed, and I've had dinner with Jim Sanborn, the artist, and pumped them for all the information that I could possibly get. And I'm going to be sharing some of that here as part of this talk. So I kind of went through this thing. It's difficult to get to the sculpture because you can only get in if you have official business. But I did get in, and I got the rubbings. Here's some pictures of the rubbings. And the I'll be going into more of the detail of all the text on the sculpture. There's four codes. Three of them have been solved. The fourth section, these are the letters at the very bottom. It's either 97 or 98 characters. We don't know whether or not that question mark at the very beginning is part of part four or part of part three, so that's why we say 97 or 98 characters. And I have no idea what this says yet. There's lots of speculation about how it's put together, things that you know, could or might not have been found, and I'll be sharing some of those in some slides here. Two panels are a visionaire table. I'll explain what a visionaire table is. A keyword builds a cipher alphabet. The word cryptos, which is Greek for the word hidden, it's the base of the word cryptography. The first three parts were initially solved by a man named David Stein, who worked at CIA. He worked on it on his own time, all with pencil and paper, and bit by bit kind of unraveled it and figured out what the first three parts said. And it went around in a CIA internal memorandum, but didn't really get released to the world. And then in 1999, a man named Jim Galogli, who was the head of the American Cryptogram Association, he solved the first three parts as well with a computer attack, and that got huge news, New York Times and newspapers in England. So that's when the CIA came forward and said, okay, well, we do have David Stein, who solved it as well. And that's when the NSA came forward and said, well, we have three people who've solved it too, but we're not going to tell you who, and we're not going to tell you when, because that's NSA, the National Security Agency, though the joke in Washington is that it really stands for no such agency. James Sanborn, this is the artist who made it. He was born in 1945 in D.C. He's still living. He lives in Georgetown with his girlfriend. And he studied, very bright man, very tall man. He's like 6'6" or something. And he studied at Oxford University. He was originally going to be an architect, as a matter of fact, and then he had to make a maquette of a building, and he found that he really enjoyed the art aspect of it, and so he kind of switched careers and decided to become an artist. And he taught at a school in the East Coast area for a while, and he was very eccentric. Like, he lived in an apartment which was under the swimming pool where all the pipes and stuff were, so he was known as the teacher that lived under the swimming pool. And there was no major list of his works until I made one. David Stein, this is the man at the CIA analyst who solved the first three parts on his own. He has not been working on it so much lately because he's married and he's a new father, and any of you that have young children know that as soon as you have a child, all your free time goes right out the window, and so he has not been working on it much lately. This is Jim Galogli, the man who solved it with the computer attack, and he's solved many, many other codes with computer attacks as well. There's the Beale cipher, which he believes that he's debunked it. And anyone that's interested in other codes, I'm going to be giving another talk on Monday at 4 o'clock on famous unsolved codes, and I'll be covering the Beale cipher and the Voynich manuscript and some of these. So while I was doing my research on Kryptos and on Sanborn and what other pieces that he's done, what I learned was that right after he made the CIA version, the Kryptos, he made another version, a small version, which he called the Untitled Kryptos piece, which he sold to a private collector. Oh, I'm sorry, my talk on Monday will be at 11:30. This one was at 4, my Monday one's at 11:30. So while I was researching Sanborn, I found out he'd made this other piece called the Untitled Kryptos piece. And it had all of the text of Kryptos and a lot of Russian encrypted text as well. And he sold this piece to a private collector. And I thought, what an intriguing thing. So I decided to track down where this piece was now. And it had been, the man who purchased it, the private collector, was Gilbert Kinney. He purchased it for his balcony, I believe. And then Gilbert moved. And so he donated the piece to a museum. And then that museum loaned it out to another museum, and then it got sold back to Sanborn at one point. Anyway, the current location is that it's in this millionaire's garden in Los Angeles. And I tracked down this guy and through his art gallery, and I called him up, and I said, hi, I'm Ilonka, and can I come in and can I see the... And he was intrigued by it, and he said, sure, come on in. And this is huge mansion in Bel Air, and they were getting ready for a cocktail party, and there's servants running around all over the place, and I'm there with my camera taking pictures of the sculpture. And I found a difference. I found that the text on this guy's version is slightly different from the one that's at CIA, along with all this encrypted Russian text. And I'll be showing you some slides of that, which may or may not be useful, but I found it interesting. This is where it is right now. This is the guy's home. Can everyone see this? Do we need to turn off the lights in the front, or is it good for everyone? Is that better? Okay. So you can sort of see his grand piano there on the left side. And so you can see it's not in the same shape as Kryptos, but we have these two halves, and on one side it's all English Roman text, and on the other side it's all encrypted Russian text. So over here you can see this is all Russian. And then here we've got the word Kryptos. This is just like on the CIA version. Now there's a few differences. The Russian side, I found that he also took the text that was on the Sanborn, took the text that was on the Russian side, and he made another sculpture called the Cyrillic Projector, which has about 75% of the text that's from the Russian side of the Untitled Kryptos piece. And the Cyrillic Projector was used in his gallery shows for a while in the 1990s, and then he eventually sold it to the University of North Carolina in Charlotte, where it has sat since 1997, and no one knew what it said there. I'm like, maybe we should go trying to solve the code on this one to see if maybe it gives us any clues towards cracking the CIA version of the sculpture. So the Untitled Kryptos piece, the differences, there's a couple main differences. One is, this is a close-up of the Untitled Kryptos piece, and you can see this top here with the diagonals. You got the AAA, BBB. This is the same as on Kryptos, but it's side by side. On the Untitled piece, it's top over bottom. Also, where what's called the ciphertext here, it starts with this ENDYAHR. This is actually the start of part 3 of Kryptos. It's not the start of part 1 of Kryptos. So it's interesting that it would be in a different order on this than it is on the CIA version. We're not sure why. You'll hear me say, I don't know a lot. There's a lot of speculation, so I'm kind of presenting things and going, I don't know why it's like that. Also, on the CIA version of the sculpture, a couple of these letters are out of alignment. That was another discovery I made when I was at Langley, and I got some rubbings of those as well. So the letters are raised. I'll show you pictures of those. Also, this is also the Untitled Kryptos piece, and I was like down on my knees in the dirt looking at this thing. And what I saw was that the letters are all in the same order, and there's a few question marks, which are the same as on the CIA version. But there's an important difference, which is that there's two dots here that are on the Untitled version that are not on the CIA version. And again, we don't know why. Was it just artistic preference? Was it to maintain a certain number count? We don't know, but it was a very intriguing discovery. So again, this is the CIA's version of sculpture. The sculpture here is actually transparent. We're actually looking through it. It's large sheets. It's probably about 12 feet high. And there's large sheets with letters punched right through the sheet. So you're actually looking through it and seeing the building on the other side of the sculpture there. And, okay, now on this side we have the visionaire table. And it's a cipher alphabet, which is just set up in diagonal. So you can, like, see here where the letter M is just repeating over and over in N. Though there are reference alphabets. Here it's not a cipher alphabet. It's a straight alphabet. So you got A, B, C, D, all the way down to Z here, and then along the top, A through Z. And then there's a space here, which may just be a normal space for that's how you set up a table. But those two spaces might also be important later. One of the cryptographers I'm working with, a man named John Wilson, who's actually here in the audience right now, came up with an interesting hypothesis on that, which I'll be sharing. So the way that a cipher alphabet works is that you take a keyword and then you make a different alphabet. And I think I actually have a little animation here on how this works. Let's see, try there. All right, this is actually the first ever flash animation I ever made. So you take the alphabet, A through Z, and then you extract the letters of the keyword, in this case, cryptos, and then you take all the letters afterwards and you just pile them up at the end. So let's do that. My first ever flash animation. How was that? So getting back here. So you make the cipher alphabet, which has exactly 26 letters. They're just in a different order. And then you set them up in a grid. And this is basically what the left-hand side or the visionaire table side of cryptos looks like. Also, when you look at this table, you'll see it has the property of where you can see the word cryptos here because that's the key word. You can also read it vertically here, cryptos. So you have the same keyword that's being used for both sides of it. Now, you could add a level of complexity here by making it a double keyword system. So you would have the word cryptos here, but then you would spell something different here. So like if you wanted to use a second keyword of the apple, you would start this line with the letter A, and then this line would be started with the letter P. So the order of the letters would be the same. You would just be starting them at a different point. And that's exactly the system that was being used for the first two parts of cryptos. So here's part one, which starts here, EMUFP, and part one is actually these top two lines of the ciphertext. And we make the table, so we have the word cryptos, which is a cipher alphabet, and then down the left column here, we have the word palimpsest, which is the second keyword. Palimpsest is a word that means a scroll that has had a previous message scraped off of the scroll, and then another message written, or either another message written on the scroll, or that it's just blank and ready for use, but that possibly parts of the previous message can be viewed through from the old scroll. And we've also been talking about, does this have something to do with solving the last part of cryptos? It's an interesting word to have been used. The way it works is that the ciphertext is EMUFPHC. So you take the E off the first line, then the M off the next line, the U off the F and P, and you trace up. So the E becomes a B, the M becomes an E, the U becomes a T, the F becomes a W, and you go on. So EMUFPHC comes out to BETWEN, the word between. And you do that through the entire system, and you come up with a message. And what it came out to be was, there's the ciphertext, using the keywords cryptos and palimpsest. Between subtle shading and the absence of light lies the nuance of illusion. Though there was a Q in there, occlusion. Well, there's no such word as occlusion. So was it a mistake or a typo? We don't know. I did ask Sanborn about this. I said, was this an error? And he says, it's deliberate. But he says it's not what it is that's so important as where it is, its orientation or its positioning. We don't know what that means, but it's definitely an intriguing thing for him to say. Now, part two starts here on line three and runs all the way down to the bottom of this panel. It used the same method, a visionary system with two different keywords. And this is the ciphertext. And you can see that there's question marks scattered through it as well. And using the keywords of cryptos and abscissa in this case. Abscissa is a mathematical term meaning the x-coordinate on a graph. And the plain text was, it was totally invisible. How is that possible? They used the Earth's magnetic field. The information was gathered and transmitted underground, see another typo there, to an unknown location. Does Langley know about this? They should. It's buried out there somewhere. Who knows the exact location? Only WW. This was his last message. 38 degrees, 57 minutes, 6.5 seconds north, 77 degrees, 8 minutes, 44 seconds west, ID by Rose, or maybe ID by Row S, we're not sure. A lot of questions that come up here is what this means. It's not from any text that we know of. It seems to be an original passage, or if it's a quote from something else, we don't know where it's from. The 6.5 seconds north is an intriguing thing. Has anyone here ever done geocaching? Or playing, a few people have. When you have a tenth of a second of latitude, that's a very, very specific location, about 10 feet across. And so, of course, we pulled out the maps and we look, where does this point to? And it points to the general location of CIA headquarters. So when I went there and I did some readings, and we've also had people that are professional cartographers that have looked at this, and they say it doesn't point to the exact location of Cryptos. It points to an area about 150 feet southeast of the sculpture. And we've gone there. There's nothing there. But I've talked to Sam Bourne, and he said he's very sure of the coordinates, and he used a United States Geological Service benchmark to measure things from. And I showed him one of the slides, and I showed him where we thought the coordinates pointed to, and he said, yeah, that looks about right. And so, all right, part three. I'll go more into the coordinates in a minute. Part three starts at the top of this panel and goes all the way down to about four lines from the bottom over here. You'll also faintly see some letters here. Here's that E-N-D-Y-A-H-R where there's a few letters that are out of alignment, and I'll go more into those later. So part three, this is the ciphertext. Now, anyone who's played with cryptography, does anyone here really count themselves as a cryptographer or a hobby cryptologist at all? Okay. Or is willing to admit it. I occasionally get government agents that come in and they say, sorry, I can't raise my hand when you ask that question. But someone who is familiar with cryptography is going to look at this ciphertext and something's going to jump out at them. And there's a limit on the amount of time I have. But what they're going to do is they're going to look in the first thing that a cryptologist or cryptographer normally does when they're trying to crack a code is they do a frequency analysis. And they look at what are the most common letters. And this set of ciphertext is different from the previous sections because you have a lot of E's, you have a lot of T's, you have a lot of A's and O's. And those are a clue that you're dealing with something that has not been substituted one letter for another, but it's actually English in there because the most commonly used letter in the English alphabet is E and then T and then A and the O. So it's probably English and it's just rearranged English. It's called a transposition cipher. And that's exactly what it is. And I also came up with there's mathematical formulas of how to solve it, and I came up with this method, which is that if you take it all and you put it into rows, well, first of all, you get nice, even rows. So that's an interesting thing right there. And remember the first part where it said ID by rows or ID by row S. Well, if you go to the far right, smack in the middle, you got an S. And then what I did was I tried several different systems, but the one I like best is where you count down by four, one, two, three, four, and you take the next letter, which is an L, one, two, three, four, you get an O. You get a W, L, Y, and you get these nice, neat diagonals. So the S, L, O, W, L, Y, slowly. And then you keep going slowly, desperately. And English starts coming out. If you keep doing that through those diagonals, you can just zip out the entire message. And slowly, desperately, another typo there, but we're not sure if that one's a clue or not. And what it actually says is slowly, desperately, slowly. The remains of passage debris that encumbered the lower part of the doorway was removed. With trembling hands, I made a tiny breach in the upper left-hand corner. And then, widening the hole a little, I inserted the candle and peered in. The hot air escaping from the chamber caused the flame to flicker, but presently details of the room within emerged from the mist. Can you see anything, Q? All right, show of hands, how many people recognize that? Okay, all right, okay. Someone want to call out what it's from? Oh, you already know the answer. Someone who... the Tomb of Tutankhamun, exactly. This is a paraphrased extract from the diary of the archaeologist Howard Carter on the day that he discovered King Tut's tomb. Now, Howard Carter, interestingly enough, attended Oxford University. Jim Sanborn also attended Oxford University. And the diaries are currently in the archives of Oxford University. So Sanborn was obviously intrigued by Egypt. Ed Scheidt, the head of the CIA's cryptographic center, is also very intrigued by Egypt. He likes to wear ties with hieroglyphic patterns on them. So whether or not this is a clue for part four, again, we don't know. We don't know what this can you see anything Q means. Maybe the Q stands for a question mark. We have these occasional X's. Sometimes the X's are separating sentences. Sometimes they're not. Are they a clue or are they just filler? We don't know. There's so many questions and mysteries here. In the diary, the answer to "Can you see anything?" he said, "Yes, wonderful things." Or at another account, when he wrote about it, he said, "Yes, it is wonderful," which may be a clue or what's called a crib for part four. Again, we don't know. We're just researching the heck out of it, getting all the information that we possibly can. But whenever November 26 rolls around, we tend to have like a little party on the cryptos list. It's like cryptos day. Okay, and then that brings us to part four. And again, we don't know what this says, though we found several intriguing things about it. It's in these nice, even rows. Other rows on the sculpture are all ragged, but these are all nice and tidy. We've got, you see at the right here, we have KRY. Actually, I have a slide, and I'll show that to you a little further on. All right, so let me bounce back to the Cyrillic projector here. So again, this was, Sanborn made the version at CIA called Kryptos. Then he made the untitled version, and the untitled version has English on one side, Russian on the other. And this is, the Russian found its way onto the Cyrillic projector. And I told you all this information already. I first heard about it in 2003 when someone wrote to me about it and said, let's start cracking it. And someone sent me pictures, a man named Randall Bolig, and because he was passing through North Carolina, and so he took a bunch of pictures and he sent it to me. And then I posted the pictures online, and I sent them to the group. I said, let's get this thing transcribed. Let's see if we can crack this code. So after I posted the pictures, I waited to see if someone was going to transcribe it, and no one really did. So I'm like, okay, I guess I got to transcribe it. So I spent 2 weeks working from photographs, painstakingly transcribing every single character. I mean, looking at them reversed and upside down, and looking at the way the letters rippled across the plants. And I composed an entire transcript, and then I went online and I shared it with the cryptography group. At which point, two other people jumped up and they said, "Hey, yeah, we've got transcripts too." I'm like, "Hey, great! Thanks for telling me." But it was also good because now we had three entirely independent transcripts, which we could compare together to make sure that we had one really hyper accurate transcript. So it was actually a good thing. So we made the super accurate transcript and we kept it within the group for a couple weeks, and we kind of played with it, but I don't know how seriously anyone was working on it. And so I decided, let's post it out to the world. Maybe someone else out there, big brain, is going to take a look at it, take the time to sit and figure something out. So we posted on the web and then went on to other projects. We're constantly discussing different things. So about a month later, about a month, 4 to 6 weeks later, I get this weird anonymous message through my company's feedback form. I have a game site, play.net, and we have an anonymous form that customers can use to send us a message, and we don't know who they are. It's a way they can send us information. And someone sent through the anonymous feedback form, "Please forward this to Ilanka." And customer service got it. They didn't know what it was. They forwarded it along to me, and it says, "I've managed to solve the cryptographic portion of the cipher." I think the subject line was the Cyrillic projector. And he says, "It is, as advertised, not terribly difficult, Har." And then he says, "I'm doing this anonymously because I have a sense of humor." And he didn't really have enough information there for me to tell. There was no idea who it was. I didn't know if it was one of my customers that had been locked out for hacking something, and maybe they were just pulling my chain, or was it somebody who'd really done something. There wasn't enough information in there to see, was this someone who'd really done it, or was it one of the space aliens people? I really didn't know. So I talked to Jim Gologli about it, the head of the American Cryptogram Association. I said, "What do you do in this case? I mean, do you do a press release and say someone solved it, but they haven't solved it? Or if it turns out, if he comes in 6 months later and says that he did solve it and then presents proof, does he get credit for it?" And Jim said that this has actually been discussed quite a bit. And in his philosophy, not everyone agrees, but in most parts of the cryptographic community, should an anonymous solver get credit? And the answer is no. And this has also come up in certain government agencies where there will be a think tank lab where they will discover a technique for doing something, but they won't release that information. And then later on, someone in a public lab figures out, and they're saying, well, should the people in the private lab get the credit for being the first people to do it? And the answer comes out no. In order to get credit for doing something, you need to publish what you have done. You need to share that information with the world. And not only share the information, but share how you did it so that other people can duplicate what you have done. If you just say you've done something and no one else can duplicate it, chances are that what you did was kind of flaky in the first place. So, and that's the scientific method, doing something and then being able to do it again. So anonymous solvers tend not to get credit. So, but then, I'm trying to think, yeah. Okay, then a couple more months go by, and I am reading my weblogs. I like to see who's linking to my different websites. And while I'm reading my weblogs and I can see who's linking to me, and I find this really interesting URL that's linking to me. It's an earthlink.net, and it says cpsolution.htm. I thought, what a really intriguing URL. So I went and I traced it back. And it was written by the same guy who had sent me the anonymous letter from 2 months earlier. And he didn't have a whole lot of information. He had a visionaire table, and it was in Russian. And as part of the page, he had a link to me saying, here's a trend, here's where he linked to my site. What he didn't know was that as soon as he put this page up, boom, I see that somebody's linking to me. And I found out that what he'd been intending to do later was he was going to put this web page out there and hope I would just kind of run across it on Google. He didn't know that I was going to find it on the same day. And so there's this visionaire table there, and again, not a whole lot of information, and I share this with the group. And then it was a Friday afternoon, Friday evening, and I got this, and I'm like, okay, is this a crazy, or is this real? And it looks like it might be real. And so that evening after work, I sat and played with it with a spreadsheet that was made by an Italian cryptographer named Ferdinando Stelle. And I started playing with it, and I started getting Russian words coming out of it. I'm like, cool, progress, this is awesome. And I stayed up till 3 o'clock in the morning and doing all this. And I got some stuff where I could sort of pick out bits and pieces of Russian, but I couldn't read it. It was all kind of mushed together. And then I was like, I couldn't find anyone. I'm reaching out through IRC. And what I found out later was that the guy who had sent me the anonymous letter was the same thing. He'd gotten to this point of having this kind of mush where there's some sort of Russian words in there, but he didn't really know what it said. And I found out that there was a third cryptographer also in my group who'd gotten to the same point where he'd figured out this method and gotten this mush and couldn't figure out what it said. So 3 o'clock in the morning, I'm falling asleep. I finally go to sleep. Wake up in the morning, Saturday morning. I'm like, got to find someone who speaks Russian. And I'm like, wait a minute. I'm already committed for today. I'd promised some friends I was going to help them move. So I have this thing. On the one hand, I want to crack this huge international code. On the other, I've promised I'm going to carry boxes. So... what do I do? So I'm working the cell phone. So I go and I'm carrying the boxes and I'm calling people while I'm carrying boxes. I put down a box, make another phone call, and I finally found someone who spoke Russian. So it was a friend of a friend of my father. And so I'm calling my father, and my father's talking to this guy who is an engineer from the ex-Soviet Union, and then they're working on something, and they're calling me back, and I'm putting down a box and talking on the cell phone. And it was a really crazy day. But by the end of the day, we'd figured the entire thing out. We knew what the projector said, and it was a very exciting thing, and I told the people I was helping move, saying, I think I got to stop carrying boxes now. I have to go do a press release. And I went, and it was really exciting. So this was the text that we had that was does anyone here speak Russian? I'm seeing no hands going up. Okay. Well, there's mushed Russian text in there. You can take my word for it. Here's an English example of the problem of what we were being faced with. And what this says, how am I doing on time? Okay, what this sense is, this sentence might be easily understandable to a native English speaker, but someone not familiar with English would have a great deal of trouble reading or translating it, plus the fact that there isn't any punctuation isn't any help either. So a computer would have a lot of trouble an automated translation program because words are misspelled, they're mangled together, the line endings are all weird. You really need to have a human in the mix to figure out what this says. So that's when I got this engineer, and he was able to help us translate it. So it was my father and Anatoly and myself, and we came up with this on Saturday, September 20th, after I was done carrying boxes. And these are actual words in Russian here and broken up properly. And I won't read this entire thing, but basically it's instructions to Secret Service agents about how to obtain sources and how you want to get a source and you want to weave a psychological net around the source and then pull the net tight at the appropriate time. And they're saying that once you can do this, once you can control a source, then you know that you can trust the information that you get from the source, which is all kind of scary stuff. And then part two, which was, and it wasn't a straight visionary, there was like a twist halfway through, but part two seemed to be an extract from a memo, an internal KGB memo about a Soviet dissident named Sakharov, who was giving a talk, and concerns that the KGB had that Sakharov's statements were going to be used by the Americans for an anti-Soviet agenda. So now in our press release, one of the things we said was extracts from classified KGB documents. How do we know it was a classified KGB document? Well, in all that stuff I'd gotten from the Smithsonian and from the other museums, and I'd gotten KGB documents, and one of those was the source document for the Cyrillic projector. And this is the subject line, and I don't know if any of you can read Russian, but here's where it says Sakharov, and And the way that we knew it was classified is because it said up at the top, it said "secretno," secret, so classified. And these were smuggled out of the Soviet Union in around 1990 or so, and copies of them are maintained at the Library of Congress. Well, James Sanborn's father works at the Library of Congress and has been an archivist there for about 20 years. So that's one of the ways that Sanborn had access to this information. There was also some funny stuff that happened. How many people here have heard of a site called Slashdot? Okay, most people in the room. Slashdot is it's a high-tech news site, gets enormous amounts of traffic, and it's news blurbs that are, it's called News for Nerds, stuff that matters. And it's a great site. A lot of people I know have it set as their homepage. And when the press release went up on Slashdot about cracking the projector, oh my God, my site before Slashdot would get maybe 5 hits an hour, 6 hits, 10 hits. And I was looking at the web traffic reports, and it was like 5, 6, 12, 8, 9,037. It's like, boom! It's called the Slashdot effect, and it has brought big iron at big companies to its knees. It has crashed major company computers. But my site stayed up, in big thanks to a man named Hugme, who's back there. He's my web admin, so thank you, Hugme. And once the announcement went up, and then there's a lot of chatter on Slashdot. And Slashdot can be described as a very exuberant community, very irreverent and high energy. And they started saying, oh, this is cool, but what the projector really says is, and they'd come up with these joke translations. And I have my two favorites here. And they said, what the real translation is, send more vodka. And the other one that was my favorite alternate solution is that what the Cyrillic projector really said is, keep information away from moose and squirrel. So we went back, and there were many typos. There were the Russian words also had many, many mistakes in them, and so we went back and we were checking our transcript and seeing where the errors were, and was this an error in our transcription, or was it something that had been hard-coded into the sculpture? Again, we don't know. This is all still in process. We're still checking all this information out. So how may have this helped us with Kryptos? Both sculptures have errors in them. They have similar methods. We haven't found anything definite, but it's definitely given us more information to play with. Now, the latitude and longitude. This is actually the picture I used, by the way, to find the headquarters. I downloaded this picture off the web somewhere. So on the right here, we have the old headquarters building of CIA headquarters. And on the left here is the new headquarters building. And this building with the white, funny-shaped roof in the middle, this is the cafeteria. So there's a new courtyard here, and there's a wall of windows along this side of the cafeteria, so as the employees are eating their lunch, they can look out the windows into the courtyard here, and Kryptos is located on this part of the courtyard. What I found, though, is that when Sanborn installed Kryptos, he didn't just install Kryptos. He actually installed several pieces around headquarters. So he installed Kryptos, and he designed a much larger area of his courtyard. And also, this is the new front entrance, the new passageway to the front entrance here. And he installed several pieces in this area as well. So I have another picture here. This is taken at a different time of year. So again, here's the cafeteria and the new headquarters building. And here we have the crypto sculpture. That's this little S-shaped thing here. Sanborn designed this entire semicircular area. And along the front entranceway, there are several large slabs of granite with sheets of metal in between them with Morse code messages on those sheets of metal. There's also an engraved compass, which is not pointing north. And I've got a picture of that coming up. We have a skylight here, lots of windows here. Now, I showed this slide to Sanborn. And I told him, we know Kryptos is here. And by our calculations, the latitude and longitude coordinates point right about here. And he said, yeah, that looks about right. And then he said, it's either there or here. And there's nothing there. We've sent people to look. There's grass. There's nothing there. And then I was having dinner with Sanborn at a sushi restaurant, because he and I both love sushi. And right after that, the next thing he said was, and did you know that each night after we were doing our work, the CIA would send people out with really powerful neutron scanners that would scan everything that we'd done. I thought, what an interesting thing that he would say that right after we're talking about what the latitude and longitude coordinates point to. So maybe it's helpful, maybe it's not, I don't know, but it's an intriguing thing. So these are pictures of some of the slabs, and this is like about a foot wide, these slabs are, with these sheets of kind of blue-greenish metal here with Morse code messages. And the Morse code messages say things like SOS, shadow forces, lucid memory, T is your position. And they kind of disappear under the rock. So the where it says T is your position, it actually may be a message that says, what is your position? And so we're just seeing the truncated T. We don't know exactly how these may tie in to cryptos. Maybe they're useful, maybe they're not, maybe they're a clue. We have found that some of the Morse code messages, since it's not obvious what top and bottom is, that if you read them in reverse and just change the spacing a little bit, they actually say the same thing, some of them. It's like a Morse code palindrome, which it's not all the messages. Some of the messages are like that. And it's just so many different questions about what's going on. He's also got, and it's hard to see in this picture, but we don't have a lot of pictures of this. This is an engraved compass with an arrow. Now, the compass is not pointing to true north. The arrow is not pointing to north. It's actually pointing to a little rock over here, which is a lodestone. And what I found is also when I was making the list of Sanborn's work, he has two other works that also have engraved compasses that are in the Washington, D.C. area. One is in Bethesda, and another one's in Arlington. Also, the compasses do not point north. And we've tried, like, taking out a map and triangulating where all three of the compasses point to, and we haven't really found anything, but there's just so many different angles to explore on this. By the way, these pictures were taken by Jim Galogli, because after he solved his three sections with the computer attack, and he was invited to CIA headquarters and took the wonderful photographs. These are some of the best photos that we have of the sculpture. So I really am grateful to him for providing these photos. So getting back to cryptos, some more speculations about it. One of our cryptographers on the list, a man named David Allen Wilson, discovered something interesting. We'd always known that the word cryptos was a keyword for part one, cryptos and palimpsest, and was a keyword for part two, cryptos and abscissa. But we'd never figured out a way that cryptos was a keyword for part three until David Allen Wilson was playing with it. Another one of our cryptographers had noticed that there was a number key that could be used to extract the message. And the number was 1473625. We're like, okay, that's nice. And then David Allen Wilson came up and said, well, 1473625, that's the word cryptos. And we said, how do you come up with that? And by the way that the number key works is that if you take this and if you number the rows like this, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, the S comes from 1, the L from 4, the O from 7. So you go 1, 4, 7, 3, 6, 2, 5, and those are the rows that the letters come off of, and the entire message can be pulled out that way. But we're still like, how does cryptos equal that? And what he said was that you take the word cryptos, and then you alphabetize the letters, K-O-P-R-S-T-Y, and then you number them 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And then when you spell it correctly, you get the number key, 1473625. And then he said, okay, I got to go put on my aluminum foil beanie again. it's one of the neat things about having this huge brainstorming group with dozens and hundreds of people is you just get these ideas coming out from everywhere, and some of them are really useful ideas. So the first method for coming up with part three was actually a mathematical formula, which I won't go into it in detail, but Ferdinando Stelle in Italy was one of the people that came up with this formula. Another method, Gary Warzen came up with a double columnar transposition. There's so many different ways that part three can be extracted. And we asked Ed Scheid about this, and he said that he designed it so that he could give a key to many different people and they could each solve it without having the key that someone else had. Interesting design. Also, we've got these letters that are out of alignment. We've got the three raised letters, and then John Wilson also pointed out that there's also like an extra space here and here, so it's like there's a grouping of five letters that are out of alignment. Now, again, I showed this slide to Sanborn, and Sanborn pointed at those letters, and he said, has anyone figured anything out about those? They're important. Thanks, Jim. Here's a close-up of some of the letters. And we've got theories. It might mean binary. It could be that YAR spelled backwards is ray, so it might have something to do with light. Sanborn loves playing with light. It might mean, one of my theories is something about the Jefferson cipher wheel, that it means wheels need to be rotated up and down. There's just so many different things that could be done. Another interesting discovery has come up lately is we'd all been working from a transcript by Doug Gwynn, who'd done a really nice job of providing a transcript. Then we found out that there was one difference that Gwynn had missed one letter. This was discovered by Roger Anderson from Florida. And he says, all of the transcripts are wrong. There's an extra L that you guys have missed. And we went and we looked at the pictures, and by gum, he was right that on the Visionaire table site, it should be it should go right down the cipher alphabet. It should go E, F, G, H, I, J, L, M, N, Q, U, V, W. But it doesn't. There's two lines that end with the letter L. Was this for artistic reasons? Is it a clue? We have no idea, but it's interesting. Another interesting thing about it is that we'd counted all of the letters on the sculpture. And on the Tableau side, there were 864 letters. And on the Ciphertext side, there were 867 characters. We're like, okay, that's nice. And then we add in the L. And we go, okay, on the Ciphertext side now, it's still 867 characters. And on the Tableau side, well, now with the L, it's 865. Okay, that's nice. And then John Wilson here pointed out, well, if you take those two reference spaces and add those in, well, all of a sudden it's 867 on one side, 867 on the other, and all of a sudden this is a much more interesting number. And again, I've showed this slide to Ed Scheidt and Jim Sanborn at different times, and when I got to this point and they were both nodding, they already knew this. Okay, is it useful? We don't know. Again, the spelling errors, Sanborn said they're deliberate, but it's not what they are, it's where they are, it's their orientation or positioning. And another discovery by John Wilson, when he went and took a close look at the Cyrillic projector, the key word for the projector is the word Medusa, which is on one line. It's actually, you need a Russian spelling of the word Medusa. And what he discovered when you look at it is that there's bolts holding the projector together. But at one point, there is an extra bolt. And this extra bolt is on the exact same line as where Medusa is. I don't think you can see it in this particular picture. From the outside, it's not really visible. It's just kind of a dark spot here. But if you look at it from the inside, it's really clear that there's an extra bolt pointing at that one line. It is the only extra bolt that you can see from the inside. So, again, was it a coincidence, or is it meant to draw the eye there in some reason? We don't know, but maybe I really wish that I could get in and take another look at the CIA crypto sculpture, and I probably will at some point. I'm still working on it. I haven't given up on that. But also, when I spoke to Ed Scheidt, who knows what the answer is, obviously, and he was very intrigued about seeing me get access to CIA again. And I said, well, I'm trying, but it's not easy. He says, well, if you can't, let me know, and I'll see if I can pull some strings and get you back in there. Right. Now, he's retired now. He's working at a company called TechSec, and I'll go more into that story later. Another thing about the Visionaire method is that this thing with the reference alphabet, A through Z, the Visionaire system that is used to solve parts 1 and 2 cryptos is not this method. It's not this reference alphabet method. It's a different type of Visionaire system. So why is this method on the CIA sculpture if this method is not used to solve any part of the sculpture? This method is used to solve the Cyrillic projector cipher. And lots of intriguing and interesting things. This is one of my own pet theories, is that the reason that the sculpture is set up in this wavy thing is that it's actually two halves of a cylinder, and that the cylinder needs to be put together to make something called a Thomas Jefferson wheel cipher. Thomas Jefferson used this quite often. It was several different disks, and you would put the disks together, and you could reorder the disks in different numbering systems. And we've played with this a bit, and John's tried some things on his website, and we haven't found anything, but we don't know. It's just one of the theories. Do I know the last thing about the M94 thing? No. Position 94. Okay. John and I are going to be talking more after this talk. All right. All right. Another thing about part 4 is that if you look at the far right, remember that word palimpsest about a message that shows through from a previous scroll? Well, if you take part 4 and you look, we got a KR on this line, and then we have a YP on this line, and then an OSO here, and there's a T. So we have all the letters of the word cryptos that are all kind of next to each other here, which might be coincidence, might not. It's been thought that maybe this needs to be overlaid onto the Tableau side, and that these are, Gary has a theory that these letters are showing through from the Tableau side, so we actually need to throw them out and use a different section of the ciphertext. And he's got some real intriguing theories there. Another thing that was discovered is that if you take all the letters of part 4 and you put them into 7-letter rows, and then you start looking for the doubled letter pairs. Well, there's exactly 6 doubled letter pairs in the group, and 5 of those doubled letter pairs are exactly lined up one under the other. Now, the chances of there being 6 doubled letter pairs isn't, it, chances are maybe 1 in 3 of that being that. So that's not really statistically significant. But the chance that 5 of them would be directly lined up like that, the chances of that are about 1 in 1,000. So that does start becoming significant enough that, that we sit up and pay attention to it. And again, when I showed the slide to Ed, and he was like nodding, he already knew this. So maybe he, I mean, he used to be a CIA op, so he's probably got misdirection down pat, but I was really watching him to see if he was going to give me any tells while I was showing him these slides. Also, an interesting thing here about these seven-letter rows is that Kryptos has 7 letters. And again, Kryptos is a keyword for part 1 and for part 2, and now we know also for part 3. So it wouldn't surprise us to find out that Kryptos, or a 7-letter keyword, is the keyword for part 4 as well. Here's a picture of Ed. I was in his office there at TechSec. He's got a Kryptos on the back and an autographed picture from William Webster, who was the director of the CIA at the time that Kryptos was installed. William Webster may be the WW that is referred to in the sculpture, maybe. Webster referred to Ed Scheidt as the Wizard of Codes. Now, Ed has said that he knew the last part of Kryptos would take a while. He said it would probably stand for 10 years before it was cracked. He said, "I saved the best for last." What code would take 10 years to size? No idea. Then there was also this interesting thing that happened. And again, I was trying to get into CIA, and I pulled all my strings, could not get an invitation back into CIA. And I finally wrote to Ed one day, and I said, "Ed, I've tried everything. I can't get in. You said maybe you could pull some strings." Well, I didn't hear back from him right away, but about 3 hours after I sent him that message, I get this IM from a screen name, Molly H. And it was one line. "The key to Kryptos is Komitet." And I get a lot of weird IMs about Kryptos. So I respond. I say, "What?" And they were still online, but they didn't respond. And I waited a few minutes, and I said, "Tell me more." And they were logged off. And I'm reaching out through my contacts, and who is this? And I found out that Molly H. was a screen name that had been hacked and used to send me this message, and then a couple hours later it was deleted. Okay. Now, how many people here know what Komitet means? Yeah, I know you know what it means. Yeah. Komitet, it jumped out to me. Komitet is a Russian word that means committee. It is the K in KGB. KGB stands for the Committee of State Security. I'm not even going to try pronouncing that, but Bezopasnosti, but... it's an intriguing thing. And Molly H., I was thinking about that. Anytime you write to CIA and say, "I want a tour," and they write back and say, "No," you get a letter from a woman named Molly Hale. Molly Hale is the head of the CIA's Public Affairs Department. So it was very intriguing that the screen name is Molly H. the sentence they sent me, the key, it's a crypto person. Ed Scheidt, when I talked to Ed, he always said, you solved the first parts of Kryptos without discovering the key. If you can discover the key, then part 4 will become easier. And he always said key. He never said keyword. So I found it very interesting that whoever sent me this IM said the key to Kryptos, not keyword. And also Komitet is a 7-letter word, another very intriguing thing about it, which doesn't mean that this is necessarily a clue. It could just be some crazy sent me a message, somebody knew I was working on Kryptos. So what do we know about this? By the way, Komitet, here's that classified document, and there at the top, Komitet. There's the K. So was it a hoax or a hint? I don't know. Whoever sent the IM, definitely, they knew I was working on Kryptos, which isn't hard. You go to Google, you type in Kryptos, my site's the first one that comes up. Maybe they knew something about CIA sculptor structure with Molly Hale. Maybe they knew some crypto terminology, that they used the word key and not keyword. They probably knew some Cold War history. Komitet is not a word that's commonly known. You go to a typical hacker and you say, "What does Komitet mean?" And they run to Google and they say it's Finnish for the word committee. It doesn't click that it's anything to do with KGB. And they knew to send a 7-letter key, and they knew how to cover their tracks. Every day I kind of flip-flop back and forth whether this is a useful clue or not. But we've definitely played with the word Komitet. There's some keyword stuff. Haven't found anything else unusual, but we continue to play with it. So Sanborn has other sculptures around the world, many different continents. He does, some of them are encrypted, some of them are in other languages. He's used binary code on some of his sculptures. He has used Visioneer on his sculptures. He's used transposition. He tends not to use anything beyond those. He tends to repeat, but he's used those methods. So if he's never used any other code system on another of his sculptures, chances are that one of those systems is used on Kryptos. Maybe. Again, that's just speculation. he's done some stuff where he took CIA, shredded and pulped CIA documents and mixed them together and made like a paste, and then used that paste to make other like plaster of Paris sort of sculptures that are hanging on walls in areas around D.C. with other encrypted messages stamped into that paste. So another one of my things is I'm going through and trying to track each one of these down and get pictures of them. And one of them is hanging at a restaurant called the Zola Spy Restaurant in D.C. And we've cracked the code on that one. And it's the same Howard Carter quote, but with a different wording. So it's the same text as what is on Kryptos, but with slightly, the words are slightly rearranged. So why would he have rearranged the words there? Is it important? We don't know. There's just so many things we don't know. And as I said, there are three sculptures that use engraved compasses, which again may or may not have anything to do with Kryptos. This is a picture of the Zola Spy Restaurant. One wall of the restaurant is a long series of documents that are now declassified documents in English, Russian, and in French. And one of these documents is the source document for the Cyrillic projector. So Sanborn did all the decorations for this restaurant, and if he used the source document for the Cyrillic projector and is to be posted on the wall in a public restaurant, maybe one of these documents is also a source document for what's on Kryptos. Again, we don't know. Just we're doing what we can to get close-up pictures of as many of these, but you have like waiters going by, and then security comes, you know, why are you taking so many pictures? And, also, I don't know if you can't really see in this picture, behind this on the wall, there's a slide projector that's projecting a bunch of ones and zeros on the wall. And I know we've had someone in the group that was trying to crack this. There weren't enough ones and zeros for them to figure out exactly what it said, but they had some theories on it. It's from a text by Adam Smith. And there's other sculptures by Sanborn that are also based on Adam Smith. Lots of data points. So Kryptos in I'm winding down here. Kryptos in pop culture, a couple things I wanted to bring up. One of the things that's making Kryptos so famous right now is the Da Vinci Code, which is this book by Dan. How many people have read this book, Da Vinci Code? And several people here in the room have. And has anyone here played the game that's on the book jacket? Yeah. A couple people. There are four puzzles that are hidden within the artwork of the book jacket. And actually, there's five puzzles. And two of those puzzles refer to Kryptos. And I will show you. On the back book jacket, in this kind of brown tear area here, upside down are the words, "Only WW knows." And on this side where you have all the blurbs and stuff, in this area here, I don't know if you can see it there, but I have a close-up here. Backwards, we have the numbers, which are the latitude and longitude coordinates that are from the CIA's crypto sculpture. Crypto is never actually mentioned in the book, but the coordinates are actually 1 degree off. And I've talked to Dan Brown, because when I learned he was doing Kryptos, and I reached through his agent and all that, and I asked him, why are the coordinates 1 degree off? And he says, the discrepancy is intentional. Jeez, guys. Yeah. So I asked him if Kryptos is going to be used in his future books, and he says that there is going to be an ongoing theme, and that's all that he's told me. So he's currently in a bunker right now working on his next book. But he's a very interesting guy to talk to. He was like on Good Morning America, and he called me up before he went on the show. Yolanka, they're going to ask me about Kryptos, and I want to get my facts straight. And so I helped him with stuff, and then they didn't ask him anything about Kryptos, but still. Yeah. This I really enjoyed. One of the members of my group, Patrick Foster, he made a 3D model of Kryptos just so he could import it into a Half-Life game engine so he could take a crowbar to it and shatter it into 1,000 pieces. Sanborn was also on National Public Radio, and I think I'm going to play you a real short clip of that.
Stepped forward with a solution. Sculptor James Sanborn speaks guardedly about it, not wishing to give any clues, except a hint at the possibility that there is more to the solution than the last 97 letters carved into Kryptos.
There are encoding systems which use pattern, light and shadow, and it's those kinds of systems that I was most interested in using because I'm an artist. And I chose not to use, in at least in what's been deciphered already, perhaps what has not been deciphered, I like to use spatial systems of encoding and decoding.
So are you saying that subtle shading in the absence of light, the nuance of illusion, is telling us that this plain text is a code too?
It's possible. Anything's possible.
James Sanborn, the creator of the crypto sculpture. The work was commissioned for the Central Intelligence Agency and stands in the central courtyard of the headquarters building in Langley, Virginia.
Our program is...
Summary. So, Kryptos has four sections of code. Three of the four have been solved. There is this extra untitled Kryptos piece with two sides. We've got this one side has the CIA text repeated over and over, and the other side has what we now know is a KGB code. Both sides have obvious spelling errors. We don't know how many are accidental and how many are deliberate. But both Sanborn and Scheidt have said Kryptos was designed to be solved. Sanborn has actually said he's surprised it hasn't been solved yet. And I flat out asked Sanborn. I said, is part four solvable? He said, yes. It ain't easy, but it's solvable. So, anyone that wants to help with our brainstorming group, come on in. We do not ask for any kind of credentials. I want lots of different viewpoints in the brainstorming group. It's my firm belief that the final solution is going to come not from some big brain someone who's doing cryptanalysis, but someone who's going to come up with an idea that no one has come up with. It might be a kid that comes up with an idea. It might be a botanist. It might be a school teacher who teaches English to kids and may see something that no one else has seen. So anyone who really has a genuine interest in helping with cryptos, come on in, join our group. You're more than welcome. We especially need right now linguists because I'm trying to translate all of Sanborn sculptures, and some of them are in language like Algonquin and Abyssinian and ancient Chinese. We're also trying to make a really, really good 3D model of the sculpture. The furthest one along right now is this one that was done by Jay, a guy in St. Louis, Stormseeker. And he's put a lot of work into this. The rocks especially are giving him a lot of trouble. He's trying to get all the little permutations of the rocks and how they're oriented. And we want to make it so we can do something with light, where the sun is at different times of the year and how the sun is shining through the letters, and see if maybe the way the letters ripple across the pavement, there might be some clue in that, might not. Sanborn has definitely enjoyed playing with light and shadow in others of his sculptures, so I think it's definitely something that's worth looking at. If you want more information, just go to Google, type in the word Kryptos, several sites. I've got a lot of information on my site. John Wilson has probably the next best Kryptos website out there right now. He's got a lot of different theories, and a lot of it is color-coded, and he's got sounds and music and Indiana Jones themes playing and all sorts of stuff. To join our mailing list, send an email to kryptos-subscribe@yahoogroups.com. If you're on AIM, send me an IM, screen name Ilanka, and again, just Google. So how famous is Kryptos? Well, on the list that I put together, I put it in the top 10, possibly even number 5. I will be giving a talk on famous unsolved codes on Monday at 11:30 in the morning, and I'll be going over briefly over some. I'll be repeating some of the information that I did here about Kryptos. So if you know of anyone else in the convention that couldn't come to this talk, tell them to come to that talk. And any questions?
We have an audience mic here. Do you want to
talk? Did anyone want to ask a question? Because if we don't, wait, there is a question.
Can you come up to the mic?
I really should. Sure.
Yeah, all right.
Okay.
You kind of went back and forth regarding the CIA guy and Sanborn. Who have you figured out, or who's your assumption, actually wrote the code? It's obvious that Sanborn made the art, but where did the actual code itself come from?
Who made the actual code? That is a really good question, and I'm not certain. I've talked to both of them individually and asked that, and I've actually gotten different answers from each of them. Scheidt has said that he's the one that wrote it. Sanborn is adamant that he did it. I believe that probably what happened is that Scheidt came up with a system, probably like a series of worksheets on sheets of paper, and that he gave these to Sanborn and said, you come up with a keyword, you write that here. You come up with a message, you write that here. Then you follow these lines, and you end up with a message. As Sanborn has said that when he was picking up the wood, the petrified tree for the sculpture, that he picked that up, I think it was in Arizona, and then he drove it in a pickup truck all the way back to D.C. to install at CIA headquarters. And it was during that trip, which took several days, he says that is when he encrypted the message on Kryptos. He was traveling by himself, and each day or each night or whatever, he'd sit and work it out, and then he destroyed his notes after. And he said he and Sanborn said that he and Ed agreed to keep it compartmentalized like that so that other people would not know what the message was. But obviously, if Scheidt was the one that came up with the system, then he would know what the message was. I'm assuming that Scheidt has gone through and solved what Sanborn did. Though when I spoke to Scheidt directly, he gave me the impression that he'd done the encryption as well. It's a great question, and I'm not certain. And someone says that the two of them are not going to say exactly right. And I wouldn't put it past both of them to be offering a lot of misdirection. Another question that comes up is Kryptos solvable by someone who does not work at CIA? Kryptos was never designed as a puzzle to be solved by the general public. It was designed as a challenge to the employees at the agency. And as an addition, when I asked Sanborn if Part 4 was solvable, and he said, yes, it ain't easy, but it's solvable. But then he said, let me add this. If you can solve it, we all should be worried. And does that mean that there's something down a manhole cover there, or that there's something that needs to be dug up on the grounds of CIA? I don't know. Again, I don't know. Next question? Any questions?
Yeah. Something I just wondered. You mentioned that Part 3 was designed to be solvable by different methods with different keys. Do they all result in the same plain text?
Yes, all the different methods all result with the same plain text.
Okay, just wanted to get that. No,
it's a good question. It's definitely a good question.
Do you sense that these men want it to be solved, and do they want it to be solved in their lifetime?
I think Ed may want it to be solved a little more than Jim, and this is just me talking, pulling stuff out of the air here. Jim has said that he feels that no good art should ever be completely understandable. That if everything's understood, then the artist has failed. So he says that even after we solve all four parts, that there's a deeper mystery that needs to be solved. So I get the feeling there's like a meta puzzle that we need answers from all four sections. It wouldn't surprise me if something really was buried out there, and that the only way to find it is to go out and get a shovel and go dig.
I wonder, as these gentlemen start getting older, they'll start dropping more hints.
That's my hope as well. That's my hope as well. Because they would love to see it solved. It would be a big disappointment to not see it solved.
You can social engineer your way to get a shovel at CIA
headquarters. Hugme wants to know if I can social engineer my way to get a shovel at CIA headquarters. Do you know of anyone better suited than I? How's that? Someone also brought up the interesting thing that underneath the courtyard, it's not just maintenance tunnels, that there's actually offices under there. There's an entire underground complex. And it's possible that maybe something's hidden under a ceiling tile, or there may be an office. We don't know.
You said that Sanborn had actually designed that entire courtyard, and I was wondering if he did any artificial lighting in the courtyard, as far as like for at night.
There definitely is some artificial lighting in the courtyard. There's a light inside the pool itself at the base of Kryptos. It's kind of pushing the water in a clockwise direction. And during the winter, the pool is drained. So we sent someone out there during the winter to go look to see if there was something there. And they said they didn't see anything unusual. So there's a light there, and there's also a duck pond, and there's slabs around the duck pond. So there's some lighting there. Sanborn made the interesting comment that when they installed the duck pond, and there'd never been a duck pond there before, they installed the duck pond, and there was like a duck there on day one. The ducks just, boom, just flew right in. So he was very pleased about that. Any other questions? Question here?
The first three parts each had a different method of encryption.
Mm-hmm.
Could there be like meta pattern, like that there's a progression, like the first one system is chosen and another. Could there be like a pattern of that determining what system to support?
Right. The question is that since the first three parts each use a different system, could there be a pattern that maybe those systems lead to a fourth system? or maybe it's a combination of systems. And that's definitely something we've been talking about. Since we have visionaire and transposition, maybe part four needs to be solved with a combination of visionaire and transposition, or visionaire, transposition, or maybe it's like nine levels deep. We don't know. Any other questions? No? Okay, thank you all very much for coming.